What if the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade? What then? What is the long-term plan of pro-lifers to deal with the issue of abortion? Hello, I'm Jerry Newcomb, and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. Right now, our guest is Kristen Hawkins, president of Students for Life of America. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us. It's good to have you on the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. Okay, so by the way, for those not familiar with it, tell us about the Students for Life of America. And by the way, in looking you up, I noticed that you are associated also with Young America's Foundation. That's interesting. Scott Walker's group now.
Yeah, definitely. Students for Life is the nation's largest pro-life grassroots organization. We currently serve more than 1,300 chapters in high school and college and meds and law schools across the country in all 50 states, where we're having conversations every day with those most directly targeted by the abortion industry for their predatory business, and also changing policies on campus, changing the conversation on campus as to how to support pregnant and parenting women and families right there on campus. And so that is what we do at Students for Life. I'm also, as you mentioned, affiliated with the Young America's Foundation. Governor Walker has been serving on our board of Students for Life for a number of years, and I'm proud to be a speaker for YAF. And so you can find me often on campuses, either speaking for Students for Life or with Young America's Foundation, talking to young people about abortion, about the abortion industry, and trying to dismantle, some of the rhetoric they have heard, whether it's in classrooms and or throughout campus.
You know, it's interesting. I've seen many different stories. I mean, a little item here, another one over there, where, for example, some of your chapters have had problems where displays, for example, showing little crosses representing babies killed in abortion were torn down by students on some of the campuses, or in some cases even professors. And then there's even some stories on occasion where somebody's trying to start a chapter of the Students for Life, and nope, they're being denied that. Tell us about it.
Sure. Well, obviously, as one can imagine, there's a lot of opposition to what we do on campuses and the conversations that we have. There are, we vastly outnumber Planned Parenthood chapters on campuses, but there are vocal pro-abortion chapters on college and high school campuses that will, instead of trying to engage in dialogue or even debate, simply want to shut the conversation down. That's, something that we've seen a change in, and, as we launched I launched Students for Life 15 years ago, but we definitely started seeing a noticeable shift about 4 or 5 years ago from, instead of having students who wanted to come up and engage in dialogue and debate, who have instead, rhetoric that they don't like, rhetoric that challenges their beliefs is hate speech, and must be silenced. And that is why you see, the cross vandalizations or, the tearing down of our flyers, or even why we see, administrators who block our students, from being able to host, or launch a Students for Life group or Students for Life event on their campus. Thankfully, if it's a public school, we have the First Amendment on our side and we win. We just won a case in Indiana, Noblesville, Indiana, where a public high school once again, tried to deny our student the right to start a pro-life group on her campus. We won that case handily. It's a little bit more challenging on a private school. We have certainly a long case record now of winning these battles and ensuring the rights of students to be able to speak out for the preborn and their moms on campuses.
Well, the founders of America said in the Declaration of Independence that the first most basic right that the Creator has given us is the right to life. And yet here we are in a life and death struggle, so to speak, truly in modern America, especially for those who are yet unborn.
That's actually right. And that's why we actually launched our Final Fight for Freedom campaign. I think today, the New York Times, the Times Square billboards were going up launching that. And that's really why we have to keep talking on campuses. And this is, obviously why I do the work I do with YAF even, because we have to continue to engage in these conversations. And if you lose the right to speak out, you know, we will see a fundamentally altered America. And we started to see this years ago in Canada with some of our Students for Life groups that we were supporting and helping in Canada, where those students were simply banned from even talking about abortion or even showing a scientific ultrasound image, not of an aborted child, of a child who's living in the womb, something that moms and dads across the world see every single day. Those images were being banned on campuses there in Canada. And so it's very important that we continue to exercise that right and continue to guarantee that right. But, you know, there's a lot of fights that we've got going on right now in America. And, you know, one of them is for this right to speak out, for, you know, the right to assembly, as, you know, the truckers in Canada are now seeing those rights undermined. And sadly, they don't have the Constitution there. But we have this other fight that we really are trying to get out the message on across the country that's positioning, you know, now it'll be happening very soon with the potential reversal of Roe versus Wade coming down in June, where we will have this fight for the very right for people to be born, to merely exist. And I think that's what we're so excited about right now for this critical, critical time is kind of getting word out across the country about this fight freedom that we're seeing, and really encouraging folks across the aisles, you know, no matter your political persuasion or your background, your religious beliefs, that you have to join us in this fight, because, you know, this is a very fundamental fight. We fought that first, you know, battle for freedom with the American Revolution, the right for us as Americans to govern ourselves away from a foreign king, foreign power. And then we had this fight that lasted more than 100 years in our country to secure the rights of every American, no matter their skin color, to be full participating citizens in our society. And now we have this fight waging, and that will be ramping up in the next few months of securing the right for all Americans to simply be born, no matter if, you know, their circumstance, their conception, no matter if there may be an inconvenience. And it's something that everyone should about universally, because if a child in the womb can be snuffed out of existence simply because they're inconvenient, all of our rights are at risk.
So what if the Supreme Court does overturn Roe v. Wade? What then?
Well, obviously, our battle doesn't end. That is actually the first phase of the pro-life movement has to see the Roe reversal come down. The decision will then, if it is reversed, the decision of abortion will go to each and every one of the states. And so we will be working state by state to pass laws to make abortion unthinkable, as well as unavailable. And, you know, in addition to working in the state houses, we have to continue our work in the communities and our campuses, supporting the pregnancy resource centers and the maternity homes and all of the networks that have been established for decades now and have been running every day. They run, you know, every day without taxpayer funding to get those resource networks promoted to women and families in crisis.
You used the phrase earlier in our discussion, predatory business, describing the abortion movement as a predatory business. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Well, it absolutely is a predatory business. If you think about how Planned Parenthood gets in with our young people, you know, their goal is to get into schools as early as elementary school. And I know that sounds crazy, but that is true. They position themselves as community advocates who can go in and teach sex ed curriculum for the schools, so the gym teacher doesn't have to do it or the health teacher doesn't have to do it. And their goal is to build a relationship with your child. And so they want to be in the classrooms, even when they're not talking about abortion. Maybe they're just talking about STDs, STD treatment. But they want to build a relationship with them. They will also be targeting your child or your grandchild on their cell phone through TikTok, through Instagram. They're getting ads. They're getting text messages. They have this new artificial intelligence robot, Roo, where you can ask Roo any question you and that will then put you in touch with a Planned Parenthood staffer immediately to continue the conversation. And the goal is that she gets into their doors as early as she starts having sex. And so she comes to a Planned Parenthood for birth control. Maybe the birth control doesn't make her feel that great. She goes back to the Planned Parenthood. They put her on another type of birth control. Her heart gets broken. She goes back to Planned Parenthood for STD tests. Then she goes back to them for potentially a treatment. They only treat about 18% of STDs that they find, but you can potentially go back for STD treatment. And then when she gets pregnant, she'll go back to her friends at Planned Parenthood. It's very much a create a customer business cycle.
Yeah.
And it's devious.
You know, this reminds me of something a former part abortion clinic owner said many years ago, and she became pro-life, Carol Everett, the mm-hmm. Heidi Group.
I was just thinking of Carol, yes.
Yeah, in Texas. Uh-huh. But she said what they would do, she owned, she was like part owner of three or four clinics in the Dallas area. She said what we would do is we'd have press releases, and then our clinics would give out all these free condoms in the public schools. And they would do this, as a public service, supposedly. But they knew full well, and I think they did other forms of birth control as well. They knew full well that the kids wouldn't follow all the rigors of all this, and so they would, come in as customers later on.
That's right. And I a few years ago, and I don't have the current numbers, but there was a Consumer Reports article that actually ranked Planned Parenthood's condoms as the worst, the worst of condoms to get.
Yeah. Why would they want good ones?
Really? Exactly. Why would they want good condoms? Would reduce the amount of people coming in for pregnancy tests or STD tests. And you have to think about, this is a business. And that's something that really helps us, to be honest with you, it helps us change minds on campuses, even amongst students who disagree with us on abortion, showing them the business of Planned Parenthood. The fact that Planned Parenthood's, former staffers have come out and said and talked openly about Planned Parenthood sales quotas. A lot of folks like to think of, Planned Parenthood committing abortions as it's a one-time thing. It's an exception. It's something they do simply to help women. No one likes to know or even think about Planned Parenthood as a business. The fact that their employees get in trouble if they don't commit a certain number of abortions every month. This is absolutely a business to them. It is not about, simply helping out that poor immigrant woman who gets pregnant, whatever the story is. And it's usually like this horrific sob story someone dreams up in their minds as, this is why, this is why Planned Parenthood, why I don't like abortions, this is why they're sort of needed, or this is why Planned Parenthood does some good. No, when you understand that they are actual business that has sales quotas, it really starts changing a lot of people's minds on Planned Parenthood.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, we have about 1 minute left. And I want to ask you this. Why do you personally care? Why did you get involved in this? You could be, committed to something else, but this is your message and you're sticking with it. Why?
Sure. Yeah, I got involved when I was 15. A woman at my church actually asked me to intern with her for the summer at a women's center. And I, eagerly signed up, had no idea I was volunteering to work at a pregnancy resource center. And that is really where I learned the truth about abortion, about Planned Parenthood. I was actually very blessed to be trained that summer by the women there, the volunteers, some of them staff, to actually counsel the girls who are coming in who are my age or younger, desperate and in search of help, and to see these women come back after their abortion and still be stuck in that terrible abusive relationship, still be living in poverty. I can't, it was very quick to learn that abortion was not a solution. And so that is why, I knew I had to speak up. Once you know the truth and to really know the truth about abortion, the violence that's committed inside Planned Parenthoods and abortion facilities every day, once you know how it doesn't help, it's simply a band-aid and actually causes further damage. Every person has to speak up. And so I encourage folks, if you want to figure out where you can kind of get positioned in this fight as we're looking for a potential reversal for Roe. You can go to studentsforlife.org/fight. We have a free battle plan there, and it kind of goes over everything that we're doing at Students for Life, but also the pro-life movement's doing to help you find your place in the pro-life movement.
Okay, Kristen Hawkins, thanks so much for your time. All the best.
Thank you.